Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And on today's very special Monday release of the show, we have got author, podcaster, filmmaker, and all-around awesome guy, Chris Mancini. Now, Chris and I did not know each other prior to this conversation, but I felt like we did because I've been a big fan of his for a long time. And so I got to admit, I was a little thrown off my game at the beginning of the show, and I decided to leave it in so you can hear that. Because that awkwardness, I don't know. I feel like I transcended it after a certain point, but I'll let you be the judge of that. It was a good conversation, and he's a good guy for coming on here to do it, especially since talking about your particular issues, his being anxiety, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And speaking of things that are hard to do, he is running a Kickstarter campaign right now, trying to fund a 160-page graphic novel called Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. And if you know anything about graphic novels, Kickstarter, you'll know how ambitious all of this is. Now, they've had several Kickstarter campaigns in the past through Comedy Film Nerds, and they've all gone through. And just like any, they all seem to go through at the last minute. And I want to see if we can help this one go through. Because really, I've gotten so much pleasure and so much joy out of the podcasts over the years. And honestly, if it wasn't for them, the Comedy Film Nerds, Chris and his partner Graham Elwood, I wouldn't be doing this. They've got a podcasting documentary called Earbuds, and I believe it's still on Amazon Prime. If not, it's worth every penny. It will inspire you to do whatever it is you're looking to do in your life. If you feel like you've got some kind of a creative seed inside you that you just need a place to plant that thing, this movie will inspire the hell out of you. And it makes you feel more connected to humanity. Because I'm going to be honest with you, as we approach Thanksgiving and I start thinking about my family, and I start thinking about the people that I've, had to kind of walk away from because it just wasn't working out. I have been feeling pretty alone lately. It's been kind of strange. And now to think about the connections that we can make across the world, all over the world, and the people that we can reach with our voices through this weird, weird medium of podcasting. It's not small. It really feels important, and it feels like it matters. And so I wanted to give back. You know, anybody who's trying to put something positive like that in the world, including this new graphic novel, believe it or not, you've really got to check it out. There are links in the feed below. It looks like it's a hell of a lot of fun. And whatever I can do to give back. And I hope that some of you are on board with this and decide to give to this project as well. But enough about that. We'll talk about all kinds of other things. We'll let Chris Mancini explain it to you. So let's just get into the conversation, shall we? This is my conversation with Chris Mancini.
Thank you.
How's it going?
Good. Hi, Chris.
Hey, nice to talk to you. It's very weird to hear you address me.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm talking directly to you through earphones instead of talking at you.
That's kind of bananas. Chris Mancini, hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to have you on the show. It's kind of weird. I started following Comedy Film Nerds, which is your podcast.
Yes.
I started following that through Doug Loves Movies, listening to Graham jackass it up on that show.
Yes.
And then when I found out there was this other show, all about movies, I was really intrigued and I got really excited about that. Comedians talking about movies sounds great. And I really fell in love with it. And it's been a really interesting time. Now, to jump into that, if you would take me back even farther, let's get there gradually. First of all, where were you born? Where are you from?
I'm actually from Philadelphia back east. It's a suburb in Philly. I spent a lot of time in Philly. I went to college there, but I actually grew up in a suburb of Philly called Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Really?
So that's where I'm from, yes. Suburban kid. went to the big city, then moved to an even larger city.
So what was that like? I mean, what was your upbringing like? Do you got brothers and sisters and all that?
Yeah, I have one brother, and, it was weird. It was like... let's just say the John Hughes movies really spoke to me. Yeah. that suburban life of, teenage angst. And, it was really like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm going to own the Breakfast Club. And whenever there's a re-release, I'm going to own it every single time.
You got the laser disc somewhere?
Yeah. Everything, every format. I'm going to get that movie because it's like watching like my high school.
So. Yeah, that's, I mean, that was a few people's experience, but, I find that really interesting because the East Coast mentality, I'm from Michigan originally. Okay. And so I have kind of that Midwestern Eastern sort of understanding, especially because I think that the adversity that you face simply through ridiculous cold weather, really shapes you. It changes you as a human being and how you react to challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But what was your thrust behind getting out of there?
It was a mix of things. I actually started out as a mechanical engineering major in college, but I realized even though I like kind of liked it, I didn't really love it. And I was also doing stand-up while I was in college. I mean, I was actually a paid stand-up comic while I was in college and, going to school. And I realized that, why am I not just going for what I really want to do? So I switched my major to communications and with a emphasis on filmmaking. And I ended up being much, much happier. So I ended up really focusing on film, doing stand-up as I was in college. And then after I graduated, I think I stayed in Philly for like another year or so. And then I moved out to L.A. to seek my fortune, as it were. And that's when I said, it may not be 10 years, may not be 20 years down the road, but at some point I'm going to talk into a microphone on the computer and everyone in the world will be able to hear it.
Well, I mean, you already said something that sounded like science fiction. You said you got paid for stand-up comedy.
Yes. Yeah. And while I was in college, like all my friends were like, bartending or, waitressing or, retail. I'm like, well, no, I'm telling jokes in a bar that I'm not even old enough to be in. And I'm getting paid in cash at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a musician for a long time. So it was the same kind of thing. When I was a teenager, I was in punk rock bands and we would go and play in bars and then we would have to leave immediately because we weren't allowed to be in there.
Right.
So that's interesting. Who were your stand-up people when you were getting into that, when you were just getting into it?
It was a mix of, Paul F. Tompkins was somebody. Todd Glass was the first comic I'd ever seen. While I was in college, he came to our college and like I saw him in the auditorium at noon. and then I think also Adam McKay, who's done remarkably well for himself.
Yeah, he's done all right.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember I was just talking about this on another podcast. I remember just having coming back from a one-nighter called the Lord Salford Pub in this weird, you know, suburb of Philly. And I'm like, I have, you know, Paul F. Tompkins and Adam McKay in the car with me. And we're, you know, we're just going back to Philly. And I'm thinking, you know, someday one of us here is going to have an Academy Award.
And the other will sit next to a man who has had Academy Awards.
Yes. So, but there's a bunch more people too. Some local comedians who are great. Big Daddy Graham, the legendary Wid, and Keith Robinson, who was always really great to me. And so, but then when the people would, the comedians that would come to town that didn't live there, like Gilbert Godfrey, or even Jackie the Joke Man Martling, who worked for Howard Stern. This was, you know, going years. And then in a weird way, you know, a couple of years later, then I started opening for these people that I was like, you know, too young to go to the club and see. So it was a really cool progression.
But that takes a lot of work to get to that place, especially just to have the idea that you should get up on stage and talk. Where did that confidence come from for you?
You know what? I think it's what came a lot from just like, I have a lot to say and people need to listen to me and no one else is listening to me anywhere else unless I'm on a stage with a microphone. So, it's a weird thing where it's an artistic thing, but it's also like the part of stand-up that always appealed to me. It was never really the performing as much. It was always the writing and the storytelling, like how to craft something. And like, I would, you know, back then I was like writing short stories and all sorts of stuff that never went anywhere. But it was always the writing part that excited me the most about stand-up. Like even if anybody listening has ever seen me perform, I'm a very low energy act. Now, that's fine. There's a lot of low energy acts, but generally for performing, the club owners, and especially, you know, when you're first starting out and you're opening the show, they like that high energy thing. So it was always something that was always a little more difficult for me because I wasn't the guy that would run right out on stage, get the crowd pumped up like a warm up comic. That was never me.
Yeah.
I was more of a monologist. And but it's always what I wanted to do. And my first love was always, you know, creating and telling stories and creating worlds and doing that through scripts or films or, and now comics. So, but I've taken a little break from performing, and I'm just starting to miss it now. So at some point I'll definitely go back to it, but I definitely want to more concentrate on writing and doing some of these other things that I enjoy even more, because as you get a little older, your time becomes a little more valuable because you have less of it.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Family. And, you know, I'm going to bed now at the time where I used to be going out in my 20s. So.
I can relate to that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, there's a little more limited time in the day. I need to use this wisely. So, and that becomes a decision and a factor. Like, as artists, we get pulled in many different ways. Like, oh, I got this project going. I want to go perform here, and I want to do this, and I want to do that, and realize, oh, no, there's a finite amount of resources for time and energy, so you've really got to pick, and sometimes you pick wrong. Oh, I put all my energy into this, and it went nowhere. Or I put less energy into this, and this I should have put more in because it's going.
Well, all of that sounds an awful lot like someone who has their shit together. I imagine that was always the case for you.
Yeah. It's always been a struggle for me, and it's one of the things that I still struggle with now. It's like, well, you know, it's a matter of sunk cost and a law of diminishing returns. Like, you never quite know, you know, where, what you should turn down, what you should pick, and what you should work on. And that's always been a struggle for me. Now, I know some artists are better at it. Like, yes, no, yes, no. You know, I always feel like I'm getting it wrong. And that's, you know, part of my anxiety about being an artist, for sure.
Well, and where you're living, there's got to be, especially in the entertainment industry, there's a lot of no. And there's a lot of, starting in stand-up, you've got to have a certain level of thick skin anyway. But it's a whole other thing, you know, to create something. and be in a room with people who are talking about you and the thing you created like you're not even there.
Oh, yeah, I've had that. It's interesting, like when I've been on pitch meetings, depending on how high level the pitch meetings are, like if I go into a network, like, or if I go into like basic cable, I can be part of the conversation and people will listen to what I have to say. I go into a network meeting, like a big network on a big lot. The executives are looking and talking to the showrunner. And even though it's my project based on my book, it was like I wasn't even there.
So how do you juggle these things with your state of mental well-being?
Poorly. So I it depends. It's one of those things that is a constant kind of struggle. I mean, I don't really suffer from depression as much as anxiety.
Yeah.
So, like, I get ramped up over, like, you know, why hasn't this person emailed me back? Or what if this doesn't go? Or, you know, what if I wrote two words wrong on an email? Like, I second guess and it ramps up. So that's more working. I'm more working about being more zen about everything. And that's my constant struggle for sure.
Well, and that's a tough one. Because the thing about it is with depression, which it's, they're just different animals.
Yes.
So not to say that one is worse than any other, but if I was going to play,
they're two sides of a painful, miserable coin.
Yes. But if I was going to say one was preferable to the other in this regard, I would definitely say depression is preferable in the sense that, you're kind of used to things being terrible. Anxiety is different. Anxiety kind of comes in and it makes you really, really feel it. Whereas depression is just sort of a low level ache, you know, like if you've had a constant back pain your whole life and you don't really notice it until it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Anxiety is more like, well, every nerve ending in your body is firing without your permission.
Right. And how do you think straight when that's happening?
You can't, and you can't. And that's where you first, the first thing you have to do is burn it off, whether through exercise or I've actually found chiropractic care helps because it relieves the pressure off of the adrenal glands that's pumping everything into your system.
Yeah, really?
So, yeah, I've actually found that, and like, I wasn't even sure. And this is like me trying all these different things. And, you know, different things work for different people.
Sure.
So, you know, there's somebody with anxiety like, oh, chiropractic didn't do anything for me. So I'm sure that's, you know, that's a case too. But I am finding that, oh, I bought a treadmill in the house. So if I wake up ramped up at 4 or 5 in the morning, I jump on the treadmill and it it brings everything down a notch. So I'm finding that exercise and chiropractic and the one thing I'm still working on is diet, because if I could get more sugar and caffeine out of my system, I think that would help too.
Yeah, but what fun would that be?
I know, exactly. Like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm drinking water and eating string beans every day. Now I'm anxious about my horrible diet that I'm not enjoying.
Well, and you're a tea guy, right?
Yeah, I'm a tea guy. So I do definitely drink green tea to kind of keep the caffeine at a minimum, but it still has caffeine. It's not like, you know, there's none.
Yeah.
But I don't drink coffee, so that's not a problem. And I don't drink soda, so that's a little easier, but it's, you know, I do like a little sugar now and then. And then I'm Italian, so I like bread. So that carbs turns to sugar. So all of that is not great.
But yeah. That's a real tough one.
Yeah. I can't work on everything at once. I'm trying my best.
Yeah. You know, I mean, fuck it. Have a donut once in a while.
Right.
You know, you were talking about, going to see a chiropractor. We have a mutual acquaintance that does this weird cupping thing. Have you seen that?
I have, and it's one of those things where, well, it looks really weird, but people swear by it. I'm never going to do it.
I am never going to do that either. It's crazy. Yeah, they put these glass suction cups on you, and yeah, then they suck your body into them, and then you're covered in round bruises.
Yeah, then you look like a lizard at the end of it.
Boy, I feel so much better. You know, I would rather just have to manage some...
Now I'm going to put my swimsuit on and go to the beach.
Mommy, that man's a pizza.
Right.
So you've kind of started to put yourself into a place where you understand at least the, you know, the things that are uniquely yours as far as your anxiety and other issues. And you've got some ways of treating that.
Yes. Took a long time to get there, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely a road. Did you ever actually do any formal therapy?
I did, and that actually got me into a lot of trouble. Because the therapy was incorrect. I ended up going on some medication that the doctor had prescribed that my body was not reacting well to. So it actually made me sicker. I had to actually get off that medicine first to go back to where I started, which took a while because I ended up getting withdrawal symptoms from it. So I had to get through that. And then I started actual everything, other types of therapies and treatments that didn't involve pharmaceuticals. So then I'm starting to improve again. But it actually put me back a couple of steps.
I think that can definitely happen to people. I've experienced that myself just in the years that I've been trying to manage this nonsense.
And everyone reacts differently. Like a drug that, didn't work for me may work wonders for someone else and vice versa. So it's, everybody's body's different.
Absolutely. And there's so much guesswork involved in all of that.
Yeah, the doctors don't like admitting that, but that's true.
So tell me a little bit more about when you first started focusing on commercial writing, like writing with an intent to sell it.
It was probably a mix, like when I was starting to write spec scripts. Like I have a ton of spec scripts in a I think I even have them all printed out in a filing cabinet somewhere. I mean, I would write everything from like a Seinfeld to remember Grace Under Fire? Remember Brett Butler?
Oh, yeah, Brett Butler.
And then I had a Star Trek Voyager. I actually wrote a spec that, which was weird that they actually, a similar plot actually ended up on the show. So I was like, oh man, I was definitely on the right track here. It's too bad it didn't get me any work. But the one that did get me work was the Grace Under Fire spec. I was actually working at ABC as a temp and in the computer department. And I was fixing the head writer's computer and I asked her, do you ever hire writers? She's like, oh, I'm always looking for writers. So I submitted the Grace Under Fire. She liked it. And they put me on a probationary period. And I ended up getting into the Writers Guild and being a writer for a soap opera called Port Charles for the better part of a year.
Oh, man, getting that in from someone who's willing to take a chance is, I mean, that's not nothing.
No, it was really great. It was a nice victory. The thing that people don't understand about Hollywood, though, is like even when you get a victory, like it, the whole career of an artist, unless you're at the higher tiers, is an ebb and flow. Like, okay, this is great, but now this job ended. Now where's the next job? Oh, it's a fight to get the next job too. Like it's just a never ending struggle for any kind of freelance work, really.
Yeah.
What's weird is then but if you get to a certain level, it reverses. Like, if you're in that top kind of like, 5 to 10% of artists, then everyone wants you for all of their projects where you're turning 1,000 things down. That's why, like, you see all these TV shows, but it's a lot of the same showrunners and actors over and over again. There's more shows, but there's not necessarily more jobs. It's the same people being hired over and over, and they're just getting overworked.
Yeah, that's been what I've been told by my friends who work out there. Mm-hmm. And that's honestly, I don't even know if that's something that I would be able to manage, because I've written a bunch of stuff and I felt fine after I wrote it and didn't feel like I needed to do anything with it. But tell me a little bit about how you started podcasting. When did that become a thing for you?
You know what? It was interesting. It wasn't a first instinct. Like podcasting was in its infancy. And when we started Comedy Film Nerds, it was really just a website and a store. And we were writing articles on it. Mm-hmm. And that's when Graham said, we should start a podcast. I went, well, what's a podcast? And he's like, he just pointed to Jimmy
Pardo.
Park. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like, oh, well, look, he's doing this and this is what happens. And you can do it right here. We'll just buy some equipment. And it was a real learning curve because there were no resources online to really do it, like what equipment to buy and how the sound levels were. And actually it was the fans that helped us out at the beginning. like they were like, here's what's wrong with your sound, here's what you need to fix it. And that's actually ended up being our resource. We asked the fans for help and they helped, because you know, you wouldn't even believe it now. Now you could go into a Guitar Center and they've got like a, oh, this is a podcasting kit. Or you could get online. This is all you need for podcasting. And there's online tutorials. There's everything now.
Yeah.
But we started, we were literally shooting in the dark from start to finish. And so we got it right. Like, you know, our first episodes, if you listen back, it was only coming out like mono. It was like on one side. It was a mess. You know, as a musician, though, you... if you were in that stage, that phase, you would probably have an advantage because you understood how to use soundboards and stereo and all that stuff. You would probably just have to learn about, you know, the digitizing and getting it onto like a platform. But the audio you would have had down.
Yeah, that was actually the easy part. The barrier to entry was everything else. It was just completely foreign. But then, honestly, it was my bass player started a podcast, just interviewing other musicians in our city. And I was like, you can do that? They'll let you put this in iTunes?
Yeah. Most like, of the time, yes.
Most of the time, yes. You know, make sure your artwork is in this format and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's definitely been a trial and error period for me. But I have to say that one of the things that really pushed me into doing this was your documentary Earbuds?
Oh, that's great! I'm glad to hear that.
I had a sort of a failed comedy podcast a few years ago that I kind of had an idea of what I wanted it to be, and it ended up being a lot of work for nothing.
Yeah, I understand that.
I know you do. But when I saw Earbuds, and there was Mental Illness Happy Hour, I thought, oh my God, there's a podcast about mental health. That sounds amazing. I'm going to go check that out. And while I love Paul and I love the show, there were things that it was doing that I thought I would do that different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so then I said, well, I'll just do it different.
Yeah.
I'll just do my own show.
Yeah, there's room for all different voices on the internet, as we've seen.
Yeah, and, you know, some of them are even not racist.
Yeah.
If you dig a little, you'll find them.
Yeah, the greatest thing is that everyone has a voice on the internet. The worst thing is that everyone has a voice on the internet.
But you guys have been going for a long time now.
A decade, yeah.
And you're calling it done to do other things, yeah?
We are, yeah. It's been a good run. We figure we've done a website, a podcast, a feature film, a book, and a festival. We've kind of gone as far as we can with the brand.
Yeah. I think that's enough. I don't think you have to prove anything to anybody else at this point.
Yeah, so we're looking at moving on and shuttering everything, but it's not like we're going away. We're moving on to different things. I'm actually going to go to a new company that I will be announcing on the last Comedy Film Nerds show on the 12th.
I'll be there.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So I want to really concentrate on all of this writing and everything else that I'm doing. Like, I really want to lean really heavily into just creating again.
Well, and speaking of that. Mm-hmm. This, you're actually running a Kickstarter campaign right now. This is what, the fourth Kickstarter? That
is the fourth one, because there's nothing better for anxiety than a Kickstarter.
So tell me a little bit about this new Kickstarter.
Well, it is a graphic novel. It's actually the follow-up to my first graphic novel, Long Ago and Far Away, which was a fantasy comedy about a boy who goes into a fantasy world, comes back. Now he's 30, runs a comic book store, and he's a jerk, and he has to go back into that world again. So that was Long Ago and Far Away, and it got picked up by Starburns Press, the Rick and Morty and Anomalisa and Moral Oral studio. And they are actually, we're developing it for a TV show now, which is really cool. So I brought him this new project called Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, which is an action comedy story. And they were going to publish it as well, but we just need to get it funded because their publishing arm is, it's new. So they don't have a giant budget to actually fund larger projects like this. So we have to get it made, and then they'll publish it. So it's another story that's really kind of near and dear to my heart. I always kind of start with like a situation or an emotion or something that I want to see kind of explore. And I love flawed and heroes that have a long way to go on their arc. So this one's about Rick. He's a small-time Fight Club fighter. He's also a small-time criminal. And he's angry all the time. And I looked at like, I'm like, what would it be like? Because if someone is angry all the time, they want to fight all the time. And I realized that this is something that's a really contemporary story because we're getting angrier as a people, as a nation. And, you know, it's almost like it's being cultivated like through media and everything else. Like, how do you deal with it if you're just angry all the time? And I wanted to mix that with like, what if he got mixed up in an ancient battle between good and evil that was fought since the days of ancient China? And it was suddenly, you know, presented with ancient philosophies about kung fu and fighting and what, and ultimately finding peace. How would those things kind of mesh together with epic fight scenes, monsters, dragons, and, you know, surly baristas? So I really, I thought that would be a really cool thing to explore. So I'm putting that together. That's on Kickstarter right now. And I wanted a title that said comedy, action, dragons, and martial arts all together. So you knew exactly what it was when you heard the title.
And it's kind of great that it's got all of these elements because the thing that I love about Kung Fu in particular, especially, you know, Kung Fu movies, is that there is that sneaky element of the hero has got to learn inner peace and restraint.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the key to everything. You get to have the kick-ass fight scenes. You get to have all of the tension, all of the drama, and ultimately learn something along the way about how to behave as a person.
Yeah. Pretty much. And I wanted to make sure I got it really right. So I actually have a Kung Fu consultant on this project with me, Rick Myers, who we do the Kung Fu movie extravaganza with every year at Comic-Con. He's checked out the script. He's looked at it. He's helping promote it. He's there every step of the way. And we had a nice discussion on his podcast, Action Film Autopsy, about Kung Fu and the philosophy. So I really wanted it to be authentic. So I'm really happy with the way the script came out. So now all we have to do is actually get the funding to actually make it. And what I did specifically in the rewards, like I made it like kind of easy where like, oh, you just want the digital book, it's $20. If you want the signed physical book, it's $30. But then the tiers go up from there where Starburns is offering their whole digital library. And there's actually tiers there. Like if you're an artist yourself and you really don't know how to make a comic, but you really want to get started, we're offering Skype sessions of like with either me or the artist or the editor who's worked with like Dark Horse and Marvel and DC and even the letterer if like you always just wanted to learn lettering or if you just want to learn about Kung Fu that, you know, is available too. So I've always wanted to kind of build that sense of community where, you know, you're helping me out making my book look, but if I could give a little bit back in the exchange, then I'm all for it.
That's a really great way to do things, to give back a little bit. Because there's a lot of stuff that you could do. You could throw a tote bag at somebody or a comedy film nerd's umbrella, something
right.
like that. But to be able to actually say, you know what, we're going to give you some time with Rick Myers.
Right.
We're going to give you some time talking to me about this process. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a brilliant idea. I haven't seen another Kickstarter do that yet.
So, yeah, I mean,
I'm sure a couple of them probably are, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, but we definitely wanted to kind of make it into the forefront for sure. Like, you know, you're not going to get like a session with an editor from Dark Horse that is going to take this time with you to teach you how to pitch a comic book or look at your pitch and tell you what to do. So I figure that's pretty valuable.
Is there anything in the process of making this that you've learned about yourself? Like as a writer, you create things and it's usually drawn from experiences or ideas, but occasionally your work can surprise you by teaching you something that maybe you didn't even know you knew.
All writing is autobiographical. So there's always stuff that you discover as a writer and as you're writing. And that happened a lot on Long Ago and Far Away, too, as it started to become like this big epic fantasy story. It started to also become this really inner personal journey. And that's the same thing with this one, with Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. It's, you know, because as an artist, you know, you feel angry a lot. You're angry at the rejection, angry at why, you know, why isn't my career further? Like, what if, you know, and what you do is you take that logical progression. What if that anger just consumes you? And then when, what I like to do too, is you take something that's negative and serious, but also where's the comedic spin there? Like, what's the joke there? And the opening scene in the book is Rick's at a fight club and his buddies there betting and they're fighting and he turns his back on the fighter and the fighter takes a cheap shot on him. He turns around and just mauls the guy to where the other fighters have to pull him off. And then at the end, we're seeing his buddy count the money and Rick's like, I can't believe you bet against me. He goes, I did not bet against you. I bet you would be disqualified. So. And he's the first one to ever get disqualified at a fight club for being too violent.
Oh, that's great. Well, I can't wait to read it. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing you on the 12th.
Yes, that'll be fun.
That's going to be an excellent night. And yeah, this has been a real blast. Thanks for talking to me today.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Well, and there you have it. What do you think? Did I hold that together? Did I smooth out the wrinkles in that curtain as the conversation went along? I hope so. If not, I learned something. You know, they say never meet your heroes, and I completely disagree. Because if you meet your heroes and they're a complete dick, you know, you learned something. But if they're awesome, like this was, then you also learned something. And it restores a little bit of your faith in humanity. Speaking of awesome, Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, a Kickstarter campaign of a 160-page graphic novel that is funding on Kickstarter right now. I got links in the feed below. You can also go to comedyfilmnerds.com and Chris J. Mancini online for more details. But as always, don't kill yourselves out there.